HMS Saracen, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
Part 1, 1915. Chapter 1, The Ship. In fierce, short gusts, the bitter north wind swept across the wide confines of Portsmouth Harbour, the ranks of wavelets made by the incoming tide crumbling into white confusion at each successive blast. In the narrow entrance to the harbour itself, the sea boiled in a trapped maelstrom and leapt violently against the weathered stones at the foot of the old fort blockhouse before being shredded by the wind and flung back into the pressing tideway. It was as if winter was still unwilling to release its grip and accept that with the coming of March, it too would have to relent. The sky was high and without colour or warmth, yet its clear emptiness seemed to turn the water below to an angry pewter, which reflected against the tall sides of the moored battleships, the pitching, uneasy trots of torpedo boat destroyers, and the countless grey craft which thronged the naval anchorage and waited for the gale to ease. There was little movement of small craft, and apart from a fat paddle-wheeled tug, with its yawing tow of loaded coal tenders, the normally busy concourse was deserted. For although Britain was at war, and had been for 7 confused months, this was Sunday forenoon, and aboard every pitching ship the church pennant was hoisted, and somewhere within each glistening hull, or hidden below the spray-dappled superstructures, some thousands of men listened automatically to the words of peace and love. Richard Chesney ducked his head into a sharp gust of wind and pushed his way gratefully into the small green-painted hut at the top of a flight of worn stone steps which ran down to the water's edge. The hut was empty and smelt of damp and stale cigarette smoke. Through the stained windows he could see the distorted shapes of the ships, the streaming white ensigns, and the vast grey panorama of power and lordly indifference. He was tall for his 17 years, yet his steady grey eyes reflected some of the growing apprehension he felt as he stared across the dancing whitecaps towards his first ship. Even his new midshipman's uniform seemed to scream a contrast with the flaked walls of the hut and the worn, scrubbed benches where generations of naval officers had waited for boats to ferry them back to their ships. After a thick night ashore, perhaps, dazed, irritable, but with a dulled satisfaction always enjoyed by an unfettered sailor, or perhaps to face a court-martial, Richard Chesney's mouth turned down slightly, or, like himself, to join a new world. Across that strip of water, anything might be waiting. It was 1915, and the war had not ended in 6 months, as the newspapers had prophesied, and as far as he could understand, it was only just beginning. He took off his cap and shook the spray absently across the floor. His hair was dark and curled rebelliously across his left forehead, helping to defeat the sensitive gravity of his features. It was still hard to believe he was actually here, and that at any moment a boat would appear, presumably at the foot of these famous King's Stairs, and carry him forward into a new way of life. After months of training, lectures, drills, and frustration, he was ready. He wondered briefly what had become of all the other cadets he had known, who, as midshipmen like himself, were even now spreading throughout the Grand Fleet and beyond. He thought, too, of the long battles he had fought to stay level with many of those contemporaries. Not with the mysteries of seamanship and navigation, nor with the complex cult of tradition and ceremonial, as the last of a long line of naval officers, Chesney had hardly noticed the latter, but with a tiny allowance from home, he had faced the daily, even hourly, problem of keeping pace with the financially blessed and more privileged young men who fretted to complete their training and get to sea before the war ended. Some oilskinned seamen trudged past the window, their bearded faces bowed to the wind. All at once Chesney wanted to call out to them, to show them he was there, one of them. He smiled quickly at the impulse, and watched the burly figures until they were lost among the maze of derricks and equipment which seemed to litter the whole of Portsmouth dockyard.